I think that's incredible. And Clay, I've told you before how global this work is, especially in a global community like now when we're all so interconnected. The work that you do in Kenya is going to affect me here in New York.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis. Today, I have the pleasure of having conversations with Clay Boykin and Renee Jaworski, two people whom I admire so deeply for their intellect and their heart and where they're going in the world and the difference that they're making. Hello, Clay.
Hey, Dennis. How you doing?
I'm fine. Renee, welcome.
Hi. Nice to see you.
Very nice to be here. And Clay, I'd like you to start because one of the initiatives, the reason why I was so interested in working with you is that you are in search of the new compassionate male. And as you and I have talked so often, and Renee, as you and I have talked, and you and Clay have talked, the new compassionate male is the archetype that the world is needing so much in this time of deep complexity and challenge and opportunity. But how do we find him? How do we grow him? How do we grow him in ourselves? How do we nurture him? What do women do to nurture this happening? How does this work? So this is the first of a series of conversations we're going to have, but in order to get there, I want some history. So, Clay, could you talk a little bit about what happened over 8 years ago and how you began on this journey?
Sure. Thanks, Dennis. 8 years ago, I started a men's circle, and it was purely because of the fact that I felt like I needed it. I didn't trust other men. And I realized that, you know, my wife and I could speak to a certain level and You know, I was looking for something a little bit more spiritual, but I'd been burned out on church and similar to what happened to so many men. And I realized that if I was really going to connect on a heart level and begin to understand myself, that I really had to connect with another man. We didn't trust each other. That's not what we're brought up to trust, to be vulnerable. And so I said, well, if I'm feeling this way, other men are feeling this way. So if I start a men's circle and set the stage such that it's a safe space, then maybe we can come together and learn from one another, not judge each other, not trying to fix each other or call each other out, but just to practice speaking from the heart. So that happened 8 years ago. And if I fast forward, the network has grown. It's you know, in different places in the world, including Kenya. And I learned something this last year because I had like 35 engagements all across the United States and in Kenya. And what I learned was that invariably most every man has got a burn inside them, deep down inside, that they don't often know what to do with. And they're holding it because the patriarchal system says that's not something you want to show because that makes you weak, makes you appear weak. Yeah. So don't show your underbelly. And I believe that with all that's going on in the world right now, that men are beginning to pull that to the surface. You know, it's like holding a basketball underwater. You can only do it for so long and it's going to come up. And so they come up and finding a place to open like that and to speak from the heart, guys are dying to do that, literally. I saw it all across the United States. I saw it with this group of young men in Kenya, 3-day retreat, the same thing. Given the opportunity, the highly patriarchal system over there, given the opportunity, they opened up. And so what I believe is that's what's coming out is this heartbeat of compassion. And I believe that this new compassionate male is really emerging, and he's emerging as the new archetype. Not to diminish any of the other archetypes or say they're not any good, no, but this is kind of the overarching element. And the more I'm out there, the more I see it, the more I just really have the strong feeling that it's there. Renee and I had a conversation. She was participating in a workshop that I was doing, you know, Zoom workshop the other night.
Right.
And afterwards, we got into a conversation. My gosh, Renee, what was it, 2 hours?
2 hours.
Yes. And we went places and learned from one another. And I just said, gosh, Dennis, you and I and Renee need to have a conversation. So that's the background.
So Renee, how does that resonate with you in you've worked all over the world, you have traveled, you have gotten a chance to meet people and to work with those of us who identify as males, and as we're working for all, God bless your heart for doing so. So how does this what you're seeing, Clay and I and those of us who are working at resonating, how does it resonate with you?
Well, it resonates really deeply with me. The first that I ever heard about this was through you, Dennis. You told me about the men's group that you were going to, and it just blew my mind. In all the work that I've done with gender healing and with women and survivors of abuse, who are predominantly women that I work with, and my prison ministry when I worked with a lot of women who are in prison who have all been abused, I mean, without exception, I never had heard of men coming together, holding each other accountable, and working on compassion. I mean, it just blew my mind. And I said, this is exactly what women need. And you know, Clay, you talked about how there's more women visitors to your website. And that just shows you how invested we are. Women think about men all the time because you guys hold the power. In our personal lives, in our professional lives, in the economy.
Yep.
And we perceive that you guys have it all together. So I was also really surprised. I think women would be surprised to hear that you guys have trust issues with each other. We don't know that. We think that you guys have it all together. That's why the world right now is not really looking at, especially white, privileged, you know, upper middle class men. Yeah, exactly. Raise your hands. Don't be in charge. Don't be those guys. We think you have it all together. And so that was another breakthrough for me. And when I talk to other women about the work that you're doing, we all just say, oh, really? Like, they don't have it all together? They have trust issues too. They have abuse too. They have trauma too. And it's like, yeah, that this toxic masculinity is hurting men. And we didn't know that. Like, women don't think about that. So it's fantastic work. And I'm very honored to be involved. Thank you so much for involving me. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Now, you deliberately at the beginning, right? Because we, Clay, you were telling me that in your conversation with you, Renee, that you were talking about what happens when a woman comes into a room of only men, or a man comes into a room of only women, how that gender, because we have a gender, we have gender biases that we have, but you started this circle of men with only men, or men who identified as male, on purpose, correct?
Right, yes. You know, it, from my vantage point, you know, there's always work that men and women can do together to heal. I really truly believe that there's things that men have got to learn from one another. That we've got to break this barrier down, that we've got to be able to move from head to heart and then learn how to speak from the heart
mm-hmm.
with one another and learn from one another. It's, you know, I get 20 or 25 guys in a circle on a Monday night. There's literally over 1,000 life years of experience sitting right there. And there's something, Dennis, that I can learn from you and your life story and journey.
Amen.
And you can learn from me.
Me too.
And it's not about fixing each other or anything, but it's like showing up with a topic and we have a conversation. That's what we're there to do.
And it is so rich. One of the things that I love is that the healings come in the silences, the spaces in between. You know, Renee, you're an amazing musician, and you have always taught me, and I have to say, is that the power is between the notes. Mm-hmm. It's what you can, and I see that over and over again in the men's circle, as we will sit and hold space for no language. And that's something that we're so, because this idea of this concept that is really that I've just so dug into is that the toxic masculinity is toxic for everyone. It's not just toxic for the people that are the victims of that toxic masculinity, the women and the vulnerable populations. It's also toxic for us. How have you experienced, Renee, toxic masculinity in the places where you think it can heal, and the places where you can see that maybe are in our blind spots where we're not? Because both Clay and I are reasonably of the same age. He's my far younger brother, but still, we are of that same age group where we can say we've been around long enough to have plenty of blind spots in our own masculinity. So could you talk a little about that and help us to have some awarenesses from your perspective?
Yeah, I would say that what's really interesting and what women talk about when you guys aren't around, I mean, we could have three generations. I've been in a room with three generations of women, and we're all strangers, and we can talk more intimately with each other than we can with the men in our lives. And our experiences through three generations will all be similar. And men would be really surprised to hear about that, but about how intimidating men can be without knowing that. So when women are around men, you have to understand that a lot of times we go back into our predator-prey mode. And so you guys have to learn how to regulate maybe tone of voice and also be very inclusive. I've been in very liberal settings where the men still are monopolizing everything. They're still not listening to the women. They're talking over women. They're not making eye contact with the women. And it happens, like I said, in conservative circles and the most ultra-liberal circles, even feminist meetings I've been at, when a man is there, he wants to take control. He doesn't want to listen. And so his politics might be all in line, might say all the right things, but it's hard. He doesn't get it, and he doesn't mean any harm. He just literally, women are trying to just say that we're people. And the sad thing is that women have to keep telling men over and over again, even our loved ones, even our relatives, I'm a person. And that's sad that we're still there, but I think we're still there. But of course it starts sometimes with men, maybe it starts with the brain, maybe they start saying the right things, and I think eventually with the work that you guys are doing, they'll start feeling the right things and actually knowing we're equals, knowing we're people. Because right now, or feeling, sorry, they might know it. It's on the test, they'll get the right answer, right? But you guys get the right answer, but like, do you really think we're people? You know, do you really think that? And when that happens, then we'll start seeing the violence against women go down and things like that, which is stuff that I'm really invested in trying to bring that down. And the more women's voices are heard, I mean, how many times was I told in law school by very well-meaning lawyers and men, they would literally say, hey, since you're a woman, let's just make sure you walk that line between being forceful in your argument and being a bitch. Well, they don't say that to men. They would never say that to men, but they would tell the women that we're being trained differently, you know. Another example that I thought of last night when I was thinking about this conversation, Rihanna, who's a popular R&B singer, she's from Jamaica, she's very popular, she's like another Beyonce. She was a victim of domestic violence by Chris Brown, famously. She was beat up and everything by another star. She wrote a song called Man Down, and in the song, it's about a rape victim who kills the man with a bullet. Okay, that was a huge controversy. No one wanted to air it. Everyone said, this is terrible. Well, how many songs by men are all about abuse against women and nobody said anything? So we're still here. That was just from a few years ago. And I thought about that last night. I said, how sad is it that people were more offended by that depiction than they were by the fact that women are actually getting raped? So men just keep missing. They just keep missing it.
It's stunning how we're in the process of learning. And so have you seen this over these 8 years, Clay? Have you seen an evolution in the vulnerability of men and the awareness of men as it's growing and coming along?
Well, speaking from the circle, the network that I've got, we've grown together. We've gone through literally life and death together.
Yeah.
You know, I've told you stories about the tragedies that have happened and how we've learned to show up for one another. You know, a fellow losing his wife and coming in just that evening, because that's mm-hmm. the place he felt safest, and to be held and nurtured by 20 other men in the circle so that he could tell his story, he could cry, he could laugh, he could share in all of that, the alchemy of that healing. So we are learning that. One of the things I think that's really important right now is the Me Too movement.
Yes. You know,
bringing to the forefront the wounds that women have experienced. Mm-hmm. And the other piece to that is men becoming forward to say, I'm wounded too. And then to realize and to be able to connect on that level and say, oh my gosh, you know, Renee, you and I are both wounded by the patriarchal system. That's our common ground right there.
Right.
It's not comparing your wound to my wound, but we both have deep wounds right there, and we are both wounded by the patriarchy.
I'm so glad that you said that, Clay, because this is one of the challenges when we heard the Black Lives Matter movement was that people would say, oh, I can't believe we're saying that because that means all lives matter. So therefore we have to, it's like co-opting the pain and the challenges that are specific to African Americans in our society, and then co-opting it to all. And this is the same thing here. Here is that you and I, as white privileged males, we can continue to give all the attention and the support to the wounds that women go through in abusive relationships, or men who go through in abusive relationships, but people who go through the abused, we can do that and still claim our wounds as an ally rather than as a comparison.
That's the magic. I'm involved with an organization called Gender Equity and Reconciliation International, and that is exactly the work, to come together and to put a face with the tragedy, with the wound, for someone to be in a safe space with men and women, for a woman to say, yes, this happened to me. First time in her life to speak that out. The catharsis that occurs, the alchemy of everyone holding space for her. And then for a man to stand up and say, yes, I'm a privileged white Western male. Let me share my wound with you. And for me to say that first time in my life.
Yeah.
Carrying that pain that deep and then putting layer after layer after layer to hide that, to be able to break through that for both women and men. It changes the energy, and like I said earlier, there's an alchemy that happens, and we both come away differently. Mm-hmm. And I see that evolution more and more. People waking up that there's something better. There's a better way, and they're searching for it, and that's why I think it's compassion. You know, compassion, the root of compassion is the golden rule. All the religious traditions talk about the golden rule. They say it differently, but it's the golden rule. So we come back to the basic, that, oh, well, that really is pretty good. And we're struggling to say, okay, now how does that fit? How do we do that? And not go against the patriarchy. You know, this is not the beaten heads together. But how do we come up along and then evolve to take the best of both and evolve to a higher place, a higher level of consciousness for both women and men?
Thoughts, Renee?
Yes. What I really love about this whole thing, and I've said similar things before, but I love the accountability and the responsibility that you and your work are taking off of women's shoulders. There's so much burden throughout the history of time that women have been blamed for men's bad acts. The mother is always blamed when the child acts up. The wife is always blamed when the husband does something. And women even blame each other. Why, you know, you're the angel of the household. You're the queen of the household. If something's wrong with a man, it must be something you are doing. Women have a lot of guilt every time a man acts up. So what I love about this is that you're taking some of that burden off of women and you're saying, no, we are holding each other accountable. You guys don't have to worry about this one anymore. Yeah. And it's such a healing process. The more that happens, because women have to be focusing on ourselves. We have so many wounds, but we're so busied thinking about men and trying to heal men. We don't think about ourselves. When women get together, we just talk about how can we help men all the time.
Well, can I jump in there? Because guys don't want to be fixed by women.
Right.
You know, now how mature is that, right? But face it, and this is a generality, but women have a higher level of consciousness than men. Women are here, men are down here. Now, anybody could argue that point, but to make the point, women have a higher level of consciousness. And if a woman tries to reach down to move the man up, he's going to wrestle that. His ego and his programming is not going to accept that normally. So that's why in our men's circle, why I say that's work that men have got to do with men. So we've got to raise ourselves up to a higher level of consciousness so that we can connect with women on their level, not the woman coming down to meet us at our level.
I love that. That resonates so much with me because when I've studied emotional intelligence, and that's where one of the keys that I think in compassion is, because it has an intellectual aspect to it, but it also has an emotional component to it, and that I have seen over the course of my life that women have consistently had a higher emotional intelligence than men in this process. And so this is what I love about the men's circle and participating in it since late 2019, last quarter of it, and that I have actually seen it happen, and I have watched, because I've often asked the question, I know how, if I want to build my physical body, I know I get in there on my exercise bike, or I get in there and I do some reps, and I know how to do the physical body. And if I want to grow my intellect, I know I can study and I can work and I can do my brain games and I can build that intellect. But how do we grow our emotional intelligence? How do we do that? And I'm asking that as a real question, not as Dennis is about to give you the answer, because I don't freaking know, but I want to know. And I would love to hear both of your thoughts. Renee, do you?
Yeah. Little boys come out of the womb more emotional than little girls.
Yes.
But society tells them the only emotion you can express is anger. It's okay to do that. And then in sports, they can learn more about contact sports. Okay, if you're angry, you just channel it into more physicality and things like that. But then they're taught, like, you can't cry. You can't be compassionate. If somebody does you wrong, you better come back 12-fold and really teach that guy a lesson. It's all that toxic masculinity. Whereas women, you know, like, when we're little girls, we're the opposite. We're very shy. We're always, our emotions, but we learn within the culture to be more mm-hmm. nurturing, and we're taught that that's a feminine thing, and we want to be feminine, so we do that. Mm. But yeah, it's just conditioned. So you guys would have to go back to that original state and allow each other to say rebrand masculinity, because men want to be masculine.
Rebrand. I love it. New compassionate male. I love that book. Clay, would you take us to Uganda? Would you take us to Kenya and what you went there last year and began doing workshops with men over there? And so this is, all right, so here we're three pale Americans. So you get a chance to go into the darkest of Africa and to have this experience. And could you speak of the commonality?
Oh, gosh, yes. And that was a good point. You know, I went over there thinking to myself, well, my goodness, you know, who am I? And I brought that up in the very beginning when I first met with the men. There are 20 young men, 18 to 30-ish. And these guys, you know, they're highly patriarchal system, conservative Christian from the roots, in Ethiopia, and they're warriors. They've been trained as warriors. And, you know, I had a download just as I was opening up the workshop, and I stood there and I said, I want you to know that I'm a warrior too, that I'm a trained killer. I could do it if I needed to do it. I was a Marine, you know, to make the point that I'm a warrior too, to find that common ground. But, you know, I got down on my knees then after that so that I could see eyeball to eyeball with them. And I could say that. But who am I, a privileged white Western male, to think that I can come over here and teach you anything? You know, I'm here to learn and to share. And if we can share with one another, perhaps we can learn from one another. And then I stayed down on my knees and I shared my story. An hour or so later, I got up and sat in a chair, and they began to open up. All of the differences went away. We were men together sharing on a deep, deep level and recognizing the wounds across nationalities, across the world. It's the same. It's the essence. And it's the essence, to me, of compassion that's been shut down, begging to come out. That's what I learned over there. And that 3 days were life-changing, were magic. And I still stay in touch with them. I was supposed to go back this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Renee?
I think that's incredible. And Clay, I've told you before how global this work is, especially in a global community like now when we're all so interconnected. The work that you do in Kenya is going to affect me here in New York. And it's just... it's something that we have to do. I've noticed that men in different cultures, even though there'll be little differences, we still have the same type of mm-hmm. wounds. Yeah. It's almost like this just keeps going on and on, that everyone's come together and agreed that this is how little boys should be raised. Mm-hmm. But I would like one of you to describe, I think both of you take for granted that women would know this, but what are the male wounds against that are received by other males? Women don't understand that, and I'm very confused, and women I've spoken to about your mission are also confused too, because we kind of think that you guys don't hurt one another. We're always thinking you guys hurt us. So what are the wounds, if you could articulate that?
Sexual abuse starts there. Bullying goes to there. And the bullying goes all through the corporate structure. You know, the dog eat dog, you know, it's who's going to end up with the most toys, and it's me versus you. We're in combat with each other. And to be a young boy and to be wounded in that way that I mentioned marks him. It marked me, brought me into maturing and growing with a less than, because someone had overpowered me.
I want to let our viewers and listeners who don't know. I mean, you went through the corporate culture. You spent your time there with Motorola, running millions of dollars of projects, and going in there, them asking you to be the change agent, to change the mindset of people when they didn't even know actually what they were asking you to do.
Yeah, and I didn't have the vocabulary back then. And it was a unique situation because I'm not an engineer, but I was put over an engineering organization and different organizations like that. I couldn't do their job. So it was mine to create an environment where they could succeed, because only if they succeed would I succeed. And all of the learning I had in the Marine Corps about servant leadership played right there. It was creating that space. You know, if I were to describe it today, I would say I brought spirit into the organization. I brought compassion into the organization, but I didn't have that language, but I had that feeling. And when it would come out in what I did and how I led the organization, we all grew. And the organization did magnificent things at the time. I want to go back and highlight something, Renee, that you said earlier about young boys coming out of the womb more emotional than young girls. I did not know that until 6 or 8 months ago. And when I read that, I thought, oh my, look at that. Look at that, setting that up. That was such an, I thank you so much for saying that, because I think that's really profound.
Yeah, it really is, because we can see how much of this is biological and how much of this is the nurture, right? The nature versus nurture. And you can see right there that there's something wrong. This isn't natural masculinity, and that's why it can be fixed. That's a hopeful sign for me.
Yeah.
You know, and also just being a student of history, I know that there are other times and places where men were more comfortable with being more open and honest, or being more poetic, or being more artistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the poets and the artists were always seen as masculine, very masculine.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on where they're divorcing men from emotions, because being in touch with your emotions was very masculine in the Greek culture, the Roman culture. I mean, these were all the great artists of all time, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, going back to Kenya, that was one of the points I made with the young fellows. I said, you guys are warriors, and you've got your hands on this sword, but you're not fully equipped. You know, yes, keep a hand on the sword for the times that that's necessary, but also have the other hand grasping compassion. And it's only when you have both of those things and everything that goes in between it that you're really showing up as a complete male. And that's where we want to get to. And it speaks right back to Renee, what you're talking about.
Exactly.
So where do you see in these next months, how do you see this playing out? How are you, Clay, and you, Renee, with the women that you're working with and then working with us in this process? Clay, can you talk a little bit about what's on your plate and going forward that you can see? Because here in early May of 2020, we don't have a lot of data on how we can re-engage person to person and how we're going to be able to do this in a safe and a scientific manner. So what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I don't have the formula. I don't have the answer. And that's why I'm in search of the new compassionate male. That's the best thing I can do, is raise that awareness and engage people to join me in this search for this new archetype. It can be approached from 10,000 different ways, but it all begins to point into a direction. So my mission is to help foster those conversations with men, with women and men, okay? and see where it goes. I was just listening to a podcast of a young gentleman, or that's in our men's circle. It just came out. And he was talking about his abuse and how difficult it was growing up and so forth. And then what he has done with that pain and that trauma and turned it around and the good that he brought out into the world. You know, stories like that, stories brought up that, you know, from the dark night of the soul to, you know, the phoenix rising from the ashes, however you want to describe it. But as men go through that, there is a place where they can land, and they land in a field of compassion.
So, Renee, do you feel that the women that you work with in the support network, all of the women's group that you have, that they are, would they trust us enough to believe that we are actually working on this? That man, because it's not going to be a linear thing. We're all learning at different levels, and we're learning. Is there that willingness to trust and willingness to say, okay, well, we're going to say that they not only they do mean it, but there is something going on here that we want to be part of.
I think women would always want to be a part of it, because it's almost like at this point we're hardwired to be invested in the power holders and in the men that we love on both the macro and the micro level. Women are invested in men, so we're always going to want to be involved. We love men and we support men, and women sacrifice their bodies, their intellects, their careers, their money. We've been doing that for millennia. We will be the bridge that you guys walk on. Women are very good at that sacrifice. Will we trust? That's going to take a long time, because it's just been so long that this has been going on in every culture. I can sit down with people of different cultures and we all have the same experiences. So what it will take is just slowly, and also on that micro level that I'm talking about, if men could be taught how to honor the women that are in their immediate orbit or their immediate environment, their coworker, their boss, their teacher, and to really learn it on a case-by-case basis, if they can learn to look at women and see them as people, then we'll start to see an organic change from the ground up. Because for me, my vision, like I like to have a vision and then reverse engineer how would I get to that dream, you know. And for me, in a perfect world would be something like what we're doing here, where you guys are letting me talk and you guys are listening and you guys are engaged. That's very rare, though. Mm. This is showing the work that you guys are doing. You guys being an example of what other men could aspire to. I think this is as good as it gets, truthfully. I think Dennis and Clay, I think you guys are the paragons that other men can look at. You're both very masculine, you're successful, but you know how to look at a woman and let her talk. Hmm. And sometimes just by demonstrating that, younger men or men who are not as mature, they can look at that and learn how to emulate that. And then we will get more conversations like that.
Hmm. Well, it feels so right. This is one of the reasons why, Clay, your In Search of the New Compassionate Male initiative is so striking to me, because you're not coming there with the answer. Mm-mm. You're coming here with the deeper questions that you can possibly bring to the table. I'm in search of. I have found, and now I want to bring all of you along to come over to it. This humility that you have brought to this initiative astounds me and inspires me and makes me want to go along.
I just know that, thank you. I know that over the 8 years, we didn't set out on a linear process at all. You know, counterintuitive. You know, it's a network and not a group. We have gatherings and not meetings, topics of conversation and not discussion. We're not there to fix each other. We're not there to call each other out. We're there to create a safe space. I know that I'm not the man I was in 2012. It didn't, not an overnight change, but if I look back there and look where I am today, I've changed. The men in the circle have changed. The newer gentlemen that come in open up quicker. They see the energy, they feel that energy. And I've had this happen a couple of times. One fellow was coming, then he dropped out for a while. And guys come when they can. We don't worry about it otherwise. They'll show up. Set an intention and they'll show up and they'll be there when it's time. This one fellow was coming and he dropped out for about 3 months and he showed up. And I said, hey, it's good to see you. And he said, yeah, I came back. And I said, well, great. He said, you know why I came back? I said, well, you like us? And he said, well, my wife told me, he said, you know, when you were going to that men's circle, you were much easier to get along with. So I think you need to go back. Whatever it was, the collective consciousness.
What would you tell if you could meet Clay from Clay? If you could meet Clay from 8 years ago, what would you tell him of the wisdom that you've gained?
Wow. Have compassion for myself.
Oh, wow.
Treat myself with a touch of kindness.
Wow. I didn't expect that at all.
Oh. And that is so, that touches me so deeply because that's my journey. Because I know that I will meet the world how I treat myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to love yourself first before you can love another person.
And it works very much that way. And that's what I get from this opportunity. This is what I get so much from you, Renee, from learning and working with you. Renee and I both separately are listening to the Fidgety Meditator, which is one of Dan Harris's book. And it's extraordinary because the entire process is how kind can I be to myself when I find myself stopping meditating and bringing it back, coming back? What is the kindest, gentlest that I can be with myself to come back to the breath in this mindfulness meditation? And it's the same process that you're talking about. How can I be compassionate with myself? There was a when I was, I have worked with clients all over the world, and when doing my communication coaching and then doing television and doing interviews, and the one thing that I have heard more often than anything else is I am harder on myself than anybody else. Now, this is everybody, even people who have been critically scathed over their work, they're still harder on ourselves. And so I keep wondering in my head, what is the value of that? And what you're saying, Clay, and what Renee, we've talked about, and what we're working on together is, what value might there be if I was willing to treat myself as I would treat you, Clay, or you, Renee? What value might that be if I was to be able to be that gracious to me? What value might that be to how I show up in the world?
Yeah. And you know what? That reminds me. Oprah had a show with Tyler Perry, and he came on, and he said that he was sexually abused as a child. And Oprah had packed the whole audience of that show with only men who had been sexually traumatized as children, and they each carried a picture of them at the age that it happened. Yeah, and then they would come up and they would talk about it, and you saw the little boy and in them. And I remember one man saying, he said, I blamed myself my whole life because my body betrayed me. My body betrayed me. Oh my gosh. Wow. That's the stuff. I don't have any more words. It's emotional for even me to think about.
I think about how in our culture, I mean, we've got this so screwed up that we can't talk about the toxicity of the sexual predations that there are and have happened. We're getting a chance to bring it. One of the things I'm certain of in my life, I have never had anything that is shame based that could ever has been healed without being exposed to sunlight. Yeah. Within me. I have had to bring it up. I've had to share it. I've had to be able to be transparent about it, because as long as I keep it a secret, then that shame toxifies, as our dear Brené has taught us, that shame is the toxicity. It says that there is not that I, it's not that I have done something wrong. There is something wrong with me. And that's where I see the healing that keeps happening over and over again in the men's circle, as we get a chance to share our openness and our vulnerability.
Dennis, I'm going to go back to something I said earlier. Typically, we don't hear in the same sentence the word men or man and nurture. And that's what we're doing in that circle, is we are nurturing one another.
Wow.
Now, a lot of people will go, well, that doesn't sound too masculine to me. Well, let me tell you something. Men nurturing men, there's nothing easy about that. There's nothing soft. There's nothing wishy-washy about that. These are men showing up for one another. My God, this man's son lost his life, committed suicide. You know, you don't go up with that with, oh, you'll be all right, bear hug and all that. No, this is a time, this is an intimate time where the most powerful thing that a man can do with another man is to nurture one another through that, to hold space for them. My God, where can we get that? Well, we can get that in that circle, in that network. Mm-hmm.
And how they're going to, and how they're going to control. Well, in this last little bit, Renee, what is your sense of both where we are going and where you're going, and where do we have it that we're on a path? Are there some things that we're not addressing that you feel like that in these future programs, and the things that you're going to want us to address?
Yeah, I think, Clay, if you'd be cool with it, I think we should do more on the mind map that we worked on.
Yes.
About, because to me, it's not just about that isolated event when a woman walks in. To me, all my synapses are just firing. I think that women, I know that women are not aware of any of the things that you told me about that. And Dennis and I had a chance to talk separately about that, and he had gold mine there to work on this healing between the genders. I think that because women always talk about that, when we enter a room with men, the whole atmosphere changes. Mm-hmm. And it's confusing to us, and we basically just feel like we're not wanted in that area. But you were able to give, and Dennis also gave me some actual words to describe what's going on that healed for me that trauma of walking in. Like, women are afraid to walk into male spaces.
Yeah.
But now that I have the backdrop, and you gave me the cheat sheet, and you let me behind the curtain, I said, oh, it's not all, it's not like women tend to take blame onto themselves all the time. If a man is doing something, or if they're reacting strangely to us, it's something I'm doing.
Right.
Kind of took it off of me, and I think that this would be very important for women to see something like that, to go down that
road. I'd love to get into that conversation.
We Wonderful. Could 2 hours.
All right. So all right. Well, now that we've now set the table for our future conversations, I want to I want to thank you, Clay, for you being in my life, for the joy and the learning that I am with you. And Renee, you are as brilliant a light as I've ever met on this planet. And I'm so grateful for the collaborations that we have together and the work that we're doing. And so I want to thank you both. And let us continue this at another time. Thank you, Clay. And thank you, Renee.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next time.